Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Kimberly Cloud Show. I am your host, Kimberly Cloud. Today, I have two special guests here for the show today. Can you go ahead and announce to the world, starting with Todd, you know, who you are and where you're calling from?
Absolutely. So my name is Todd Medema, and I'm calling from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
And you too, Dr. Waldman.
Hi, I'm Dr. Larry Waldman, a semi-retired clinical forensic psychologist speaking to you from Phoenix, Arizona.
I didn't mean to take up your time. I was on another interview, but now we're going to dig into men overcoming challenges, the questions, the great questions that I have, starting with number one. How do societal expectations of being the provider affect men's mental health and stress levels? And that question is for you, Dr. Waldman.
Well, financial stress is one of the major ones befalling us all. It's certainly one of the major reasons that marriages are under a lot of duress. The old adage, money, sex, in-laws, kids, those pretty much seal the deal, if you will. So trying to earn a living, a decent one, is challenging, and many men struggle with that. Now it's changed of late, of course, because in the last couple of decades, the wife now is also part of the equation, where she is earning a living as well. But working that out again creates other issues, like who picks up the kids and who's responsible for what, and things of that nature. My wife taught fourth grade for 30 years, while I ran a practice for 45 years, and so on. But there's a lot of planning that has to go into it. And early on, of course, it was challenging until I got my practice moving. In fact, one very quick story, and then I'll hand it off. Early on, when I started my practice, we had our first son. I know I have two. He was about maybe two or so. And I came home right around dinner time, and he was in his high chair. And my wife was in the other room, and I walked in and I said, "Hey, bud." And he turns around and says, "Daddy, any new referrals?" Because he had obviously heard his mother ask that question every time I came home. He figured that's the new greeting, you know. So it was interesting. Fortunately, yeah. It got much better than that after a while.
Very intelligent two-year-old, yes. And how about you, Todd?
Yeah, it's always funny how kids have just this way of picking up on things that we don't notice because it's just part of our lives. For me, I actually had to confront this pretty directly last year. I had been working at Tesla for 4 years, dream job, working on the Tesla Megapack battery to advance clean energy, and then Elon laid off a significant portion of the company. I was affected by that.
Sorry to hear that.
Thank you. It really made me kind of confront for the first time in my life of like, hey, there's all these expectations that you don't notice when you have a job, but the moment you lose that job, you're kind of like, who am I? It's even in these little details, like you go to a party and the first thing someone asks you is like, well, what do you do? And if you have a job, you're just like, you know, whatever, this is my job. But the moment that you don't have an answer to that, it's just so uncomfortable. And it's so baked into all of these little interactions with kids, with friends. And so my partner is French, and we've had the good fortune to be able to visit her family in France a few times now. And one of the things I've come to appreciate about other cultures is they do things differently. And in France, at least, what you do for work is much less socially important. We've met people there. I've had multiple interactions with the same people, hours and hours and hours of talking to them, and I still don't know what they do for work. Whereas in the US, it's like the first thing you do is like, hi, I'm Joe. I do this. So I think there's almost an interesting opportunity for us as individuals to shift the culture a bit and maybe don't ask someone what they do as like your first question.
And how does this, Todd, affect a men's mental health and stress levels?
I think it does play a lot into stress. Because even if we aren't consciously aware of it, mm-hmm. we're definitely unconsciously aware of it, of how we fight for our jobs, how we're afraid of losing them. And that puts us in a poverty mindset. If you're doing something because you're afraid of losing it, you're not going to make the best decision for yourself or for the world, compared to if you're doing it because you want to do it.
Well said. And Dr. Wallman, in what ways do men struggle with expressing emotions due to stereotypes about masculinity?
Well, that's been a very long issue. One of the books I wrote was How Come I Love Him But Can't Live With Him? And people asked me, well, why did you take the women's perspective? And I said very clearly, because 90% of my customers who would buy a book like this will be women. So women are much more in touch with their mental health than our men. It's just that way. When you're a little boy and you fall down and skin your knee and you start to cry, if you're a little boy, what do your parents say, particularly your dad? Oh, come on, suck it up, and so forth. If you're a little girl, it's, oh, come here, sweetie, and so on. So it's a whole different thing. Men grow up really believing that you need to hide your emotions. And so what ends up happening is when we do emote, it's usually in the form of a tantrum or a yell or a shout or something of that nature. Unfortunately, most males are very reluctant to see a therapist, to engage in marital counseling, and so on. I can't tell you how many times I've sat in front of a woman who's complaining about her marriage, and I said, well, bring in hubby. And she goes, no, there's no way that's going to happen. He's not going to talk to some stranger about his feelings, and so on. Now, sometimes we got around that by working with the wife and improving things. And finally, he might come in saying, well, you must be okay because things have never been better. Well, that's because she's working. Now it's your turn, and so on. But yeah, it's true. By and large, men have a difficult time effectively knowing and sharing their feelings.
Well said. And how about you, Todd? In what ways do men struggle with expressing emotions due to stereotypes about masculinity?
Yeah. So I've been doing therapy for over 10 years, and it's still hard. I think to the doctor's point, there's just so much cultural reinforcement of, like, literally the phrase man up is like, you are a man, don't express emotion. And so we're just constantly being reinforced with this idea. But one of the things that I've learned in therapy that I am still working on, but try to remind myself, is that emotions actually make us more powerful, not less. These portrayals often are like, oh, you're expressing emotion, you're weak, don't do that. But especially in the modern world where we're, you know, we're like not under threat of a tiger eating us, the real profound threats to our life are actually social and emotional, you know, being laid off from your job or like being divorced by your partner or rejected by your social group. And these require emotional attunement, not like, I wouldn't say emotional strength. Like, it's not about being big. It's about being vulnerable and paying attention to the other people. And so, yeah, I keep trying to remind myself that like the modern strength, the modern power in this world comes from not like physical strength and stoicism, but from being vulnerable and connecting with people.
Well said. I think personally, I'm not a man, but I think y'all go through a lot trying to mask the emotions that y'all hold. Y'all have to outburst and show them in a different perspective. And I was listening to everything y'all said. So number three, how does workplace competition or pressure to succeed impacts men's self of identity? I'm going to start with you, Dr. Waldman.
Well, it's an interesting one. Again, as Todd mentioned, we put our work, our position as a major part of our identity. You know, it is interesting, and it does kind of follow gender, because if you ask a man, just like Todd said, you know, who are you? The person will usually say, well, I do this. If you ask many women, who are you? They'll say, well, I'm a wife, I'm a mother, and so on. So they see it differently. So it is part of, for many men, part of their identity. And as Todd mentioned, you know, when let's say, you know, you have a failure in your job or you get terminated or laid off or whatever, it's not just, oh, gee, I don't have a job right now. I need to find another one. It's like, ooh, part of my identity is gone. I'm not as good a person as I was previously. Even though there were extenuating circumstances that led to your dismissal, you take it as a personal affront. It's something that men have always struggled with. And let's face it, I mean, if we take it back all the way to the beginning in the caveman days, you know, remember, it was the cave woman who stayed in the cave with the kids and cooked whatever dinner. And it was the man who was out there, you know hunting and gathering and bringing it in. So that still stays with us. It's, I think, almost part of our DNA.
Well said. And Todd, how does the workplace competition or pressure to succeed impacts men's sense of identity?
Yeah. Yeah. Work is important to men for their identity. And I think we oftentimes maybe feel like the competition and the striving to succeed is almost a way to protect ourselves. You know, it's like, if we push harder, then we're safer. If we get higher in our career ladder, if we have more money, if we're working these longer hours, we are safer. And, you know, that's true to an extent, but I think very often it turns into almost like a workaholic reflex of this like addiction to just a little bit more to create a little bit more safety. I've met plenty of guys who have plenty of money. They earn tons of money and yet they're still working harder. They're still burning themselves out instead of being with their family or friends or doing things that recharge and refill them. And, you know, to me, when I see these behaviors where it's like, you're pushing yourself to the detriment of your own health when it's like, you know, factually not necessary. You know, if you have $1 million in your bank account, it's really not necessary to be like grinding yourself into dust to earn another million. And so that to me speaks of you know, these poverty, these addiction behaviors that are really enforced by our ideas about what a man should be, that they should sacrifice themselves to create an impossible bulwark of safety, when in reality, the world, so much in the world is beyond our control, and you really cannot create on your own a infinitely safe, indestructible wall around you and your family. There's almost this like vulnerability, this letting go, this accepting that no matter how hard I work, I could be laid off, I could lose my job. And I trust in myself, I trust in my family and friends and support network that even if that happens, I will be okay.
Okay. I think y'all have it the worst because y'all have to collide with different personalities, you know, in the workplace competition. So I get what y'all saying. So number four, and this question is going to start off with Todd. What challenges do men face when trying to balance family responsibilities with career demands?
It's real. I think women face this too, especially now that women are participating more in the workforce. Obviously, there's, you know, the cultural background for each gender. But yeah. I was actually just talking about this with my partner, this idea that pretty much up until our generation, there was a pretty standard script of how things would go. You know, man goes out to hunt, woman takes care of the family. But in the past few decades, we've come to realize that it doesn't have to be that way, which is fantastic, because there are plenty of women out there who want to, you know, work hard, have an amazing career. There are plenty of guys out there who want to stay home and take care of their kids. But there's not a clear script. And so each couple is figuring this out on their own. And it's scary. Yeah.
Okay. And how about you, Dr. Wallman?
Well said. I think it's important that we recognize where a lot of this comes from, of course. And that is, kids learn the first, 5, 6, 7, 8 years of their lives from their two major teachers, their mom and their dad. And as far as they're concerned, you know, that's it. You know, it's not like they're looking up on Yelp or I used to say the encyclopedia. Now they don't do that anymore. But, you know, trying to find out what's real. They just believe what they see, you see. And so a lot of this is it flows downhill, if you will. If the little boy, you know, sees his dad, you know, going to work, coming home, and then sitting on a lounge chair, have a beer while mom is cooking dinner and taking care of the kids and so forth, you know, as far as he's concerned, that's the way it's supposed to be, and so on. Whereas the little girl, of course, looks at that. And as far as she's concerned, that's what she expects too, and so on. And so, you know, we have to understand that as parents, we're teaching them many times without directly instructing them, but just by our actions. But it, of course, what we do want is a balance. That yes, you know, you've got a job to do, of course. And you've got to support the family, but at the same time, you need to interact with them. It's a good thing for dads, you know, to put their kids to bed, to spend time with them, and very importantly, to show your kids that you respect and appreciate and care for your partner. Because here again, you know, what do these kids learn about as far as marriage is concerned? Everything that you're doing that first decade or so of that child's life is being imprinted in that child. They don't know any better. They don't know it's good or bad, right or wrong. All they know is this is it. And that's pretty much what they're going to have to, what they're going to follow. And then some poor souls, of course, then have to undo it for the rest of their lives.
Well said. Yes, well said. So, Todd, tell me, how do issues around body image and physical appearance affects a men's self-esteem? Hello?
Thinking.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Yeah. Sometimes I do this. My partner laughs at me, like, hello. I think the idea of women's body image has been pretty well talked about in the media of how toxic that has been. And we are starting to have some conversations about men's body image as well. But it is useful to think that, like, anytime you see something happening to one gender, there's probably the opposite happening to the other gender, because they kind of act as a mirror for each other. And so, with women's body image issues, we saw, like, obsession about thinness that turned out to be unhealthy. With men, I think there's this, like, men must be super muscular and fit. Like, you look at, like, any sort of action movie, and it's like the men always have, like, a 12 pack and biceps the size of a basketball. And it's like, that's frankly unrealistic. And anytime we have those unrealistic expectations for ourselves or for other people, be it physical or emotional or mental or job wise, those unrealistic expectations push us to do behaviors that make us frankly unhealthy and unhappy.
Wow, that was intelligent. So how do issues around body image and physical appearance affect a man's self-esteem, Dr. Waldman?
I think it varies over time. I mean, Todd's absolutely correct. It's much more of a woman's issue than for many men. Frankly, some men just don't really care very much. But as a senior, I can tell you that far too many men, it's not so much a matter of their how they look, if you will, but their overall physical health. That is something that I actually talk a lot about in terms of wise aging. I continue to stay fit, and I teach yoga and do it myself. And I really try to get as many senior men into a yoga class to avail themselves of the benefit, so that they can reach down and pick something up off the floor, or get off the couch, or not ask for help to get off the floor, get up off the floor, and so on. And unfortunately, a lot of men, as they round that half century mark, they take the attitude as like, who cares? Right? No one's looking at me anymore, and so on. I've been married, a couple of decades, and so forth. So, it doesn't make that much difference. And it's not just, how you look, and it's more like how you feel. And most importantly, what kind of life are you going to have, later on? I mean, I want to take long bike rides with my grandchildren, and so forth. In fact, I just happened to have a sleepover with my grandson, who's 10, and we're talking about maybe biking along the Danube in another couple of years. And even though I'll be, 79 here in about a month,
Wow, congratulations. We
well,
live to
it's, I
79.
intend I intend to be able to continue to do that, and I
Yeah.
certainly can now. So, yeah, it's something that I wish more men, thought about, and that is staying healthy as you reach those golden years.
Well said. Much respect. Todd, what barriers exist for men seeking mental health support or therapy?
Yeah, I think in terms of societal structural barriers, we know that the U.S. is having basically a mental health epidemic, and that access to therapists is pretty limited, which just makes it hard to find time on their calendar, which makes it more expensive. Mm-hmm. And that obviously affects both women and men pretty equally. But I do think there are some unique challenges to men finding the right therapist to talk to, one who can relate to you more. And also just that kind of core societal pressure of understanding that you should talk to someone about your emotions and that it's okay and not a sign of weakness, that is a big hurdle to overcome. And just, I want to remind any man on the call that by being more in tune with your emotions, you will actually become a more powerful person, and you will have richer, more fulfilling, and happier relationships in your life.
Okay, well said. And how about you, Dr. Wallman?
Great question. If anything good came out of COVID, is that there has been a much more discussion about mental health. There's no question that, and I touched on this before, that men have shied away as a rule from that arena, and it's beginning to shift a little bit, maybe a lot. I'm especially thankful for this. I think Michael Thomas, the Olympic swimmer, he's gone on on television and advertised, for men seeking mental health services. That's fabulous. He's the only one, and he says, I've suffered with depression, and I sought therapy, and it was helpful, and so on. So yes, I think the major block for most men regarding mental health is their own. Yes, because of COVID and the fact that there's been more attention paid to it, there more therapists are busy. But if you find the right therapist over time, you should be able to get in there and get the help you need.
I believe, well said, I believe there's a stigma against men seeking mental health support or therapy only because men supposed to be the strong ones and the providers. So I understand exactly where y'all are coming from. So now, how can the people reach you, Todd?
Yeah, so you can learn more about me and reach me at toddmedema.com, toddmedema.com. I have my contact information, my social media on there.
Okay, and how about you, Dr. Wallman?
My website is topphoenixpsychologist.com. You can also email me at LFW, that's my initials, at LarryWaldmanPhD.com. And my books are all on Amazon.
Okay.
There's actually 8 of them related to parenting, marriage, being successful, and wise aging as well.
Okay, and stay on the line, you guys. I want to thank you guys for joining my show today. You take care, be safe, and I'll see you guys later. Bye. Never waste my time.